Welcome to another edition of the Health First Show. I'm your host, Dave Fuller, and today we're going to be talking about probiotics. We're going to be talking about some things that can really help make your stomach feel better. In the first half of the show, we'll be talking with our first guest, and we'll be talking in the second half of the show with Dr. Jonathan Beatty, and we'll be talking about cholesterol. But before we do that, here's Rich with the Health News.
A new study reveals energy drinks are linked to hyperactivity and inattention in middle school students. Yale University researchers looked at more than 1,600 students at middle schools in one urban school district in Connecticut. Their average age was around 12 years. Boys were more likely to consume energy drinks than girls. The researchers also found among boys, black and Hispanic students were more likely to drink the beverages than white students. Children who consumed energy drinks were 66% more likely to be at risk for hyperactivity and inattention symptoms, according to the study in the current issue of the journal Academic Pediatrics. Energy drinks have high levels of sugar and often contain caffeine, the researchers noted. For the study, the investigators took into account the number and type of other sugar-sweetened drinks consumed by the students. When younger people have heart attacks, stress may lead to a worse recovery. A new study suggests this problem may be of particular concern among women. Although stress affects both men and women, researchers found women had higher levels of stress than men. Those higher stress levels may have played a role in their worse recovery in the month after suffering a heart attack. The researchers found women had more chest pain, poor quality of life, and worse overall health than men. While this study found a link between high stress levels and a worse outcome soon after a heart attack, it wasn't designed to prove whether or not stress was the direct cause of the poorer outcome. The report was published online February 9th in the journal Circulation. And finally, long-term and or high doses of a class of medications used for hay fever, depression, and other ills has been linked in a new study to a higher risk of dementia. The drugs, called anticholinergics, include non-prescription Benadryl and tricyclic antidepressants like Cinequin. This class of medications also includes older antihistamines like chlortrimetone and antimuscarinic drugs for bladder control, such as Ditropan. However, the study could only point to an assertion between long-term or high-dose use of these drugs and a higher risk of dementia. It could not prove cause and effect. The researchers say the study, published January 26th in JAMA Internal Medicine, is the first to link higher use of anticholinergic medications to increased risk of dementia. It is also the first to suggest the dementia risk associated with these drugs may not be reversible even years after people stop taking them.
Thanks for that, Reg. Well, our first guest, Megan Teltner, is an author and a blogger, and she's experienced some difficulties with Crohn's, and she's going to tell us about that today. Megan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Tell us a little bit about, when you first found out about how you had Crohn's and your experience in moving forward from that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was diagnosed in 2006, and it was following about 4 years of serious digestive challenges that were sort of catapulted by, I'd gone a bunch of vaccinations and went traveling in Africa and started developing all these symptoms. So it took several years before I was sort of officially diagnosed. And conventional medicine will tell us that there's no known cause, and that the only treatment options are to manage the symptoms of the disease. And so, I kind of felt like there had to be another option. I was only 26 years old. I didn't want to deal with this the rest of my life. And I started doing a lot of research and started looking into foods that could potentially help the condition and foods that could potentially exacerbate inflammation and ulcerations of the tissue in the body. And so I started doing my own research and developing sort of a list of foods that I felt were my safe foods and a list of foods that I had to avoid. And I stuck to it and incorporated into all of that lifestyle practices to better manage and process stress. Started practicing yoga and meditation. So took on this full sort of lifestyle transformation. The result was that within, 6 weeks, I was completely symptom-free from this disease that I had been told, and it's commonly believed to be incurable. And so that was now, gosh, almost 9 years ago, 8 or 9 years ago. And again, I've remained completely symptom-free and have such begun doing the work that I'm doing as a nutritionist and writing books and doing all that. And all that to say that there is no one, you know, magic cure, magic solution, and everyone's on their own journey. And some people will be able to resolve their symptoms. Some people may not be able to, but that is sort of, that was my story. That's how I got into the work I was doing. And that was how I sort of developed my knowledge around health and the benefits of therapeutic foods in our lifestyle.
It's interesting, Megan. You know, you're talking about Crohn's and colitis. You talked about a little bit about stress there. What, first of all, tell people, what are the symptoms of Crohn's and colitis? What happens when people get these or diagnosed with these diseases, or even before that?
Yeah, they're super cute. So full-blown Crohn's is usually accompanied by explosive bloody diarrhea, mucus, vomiting, fever. It can relate to other kinds of infection in the body, inflammation, sort of joint inflammation is often accompanied by skin inflammation like psoriasis. So typically the main difference between Crohn's and colitis, both are inflammatory bowel diseases, both are autoimmune, both have a genetic predisposition component to it, though with all the research we're now seeing with epigenetics, we're learning that, you know, just because we have a genetic predisposition or genetic mutation, those genes can be switched on or off by lifestyle practices and the foods we eat. So the main difference between Crohn's and colitis is that colitis typically only affects the colon, the large intestine, whereas Crohn's can affect anything from the mouth to the anus, to the exit point. So typically, conventional medicine will work with these diseases using non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, immunosuppressant drugs, often surgery, intestinal resectioning. So they'll remove the part of the intestine that is infected and then, you know, section together the parts that are remaining. So, typically for people who suffer, it's a lifetime challenge. It's a horrible, debilitating disease. For me, my symptoms began, like many others, begin with symptoms that were diagnosed initially as irritable bowel syndrome, which was, you know, intermittent. Some people have IBS with constipation. Some people have IBS with diarrhea. Some have intermittent, a little bit of both, a nice little buffet of digestive upset. And that's what I dealt with, was sort of this mix of things that begun around the time I went traveling and slowly progressed into what was diagnosed later as full-blown Crohn's.
Megan, you mentioned vaccinations, and it's a hot topic right now. Do you think that you had some side effects from those vaccinations?
I do. It's a hot topic, and I don't often talk about it because most people are not neutral on the topic. Mm-hmm. But I know that for me, if you are prone to autoimmune conditions, I got 5 vaccinations in one day. Mm-hmm. Within 5 days, I'd had this horrible reaction to them and essentially was never the same since. I don't believe that my vaccines were 100% what triggered my autoimmune disease. I think they were part of the equation. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about stress, you know, because, you know, I've known some people that have had colitis, Crohn's, irritable bowel. It seems that stress is a big factor in this disease. How much of a factor was it for you?
I think it was pretty substantial. I mean, I was, I guess, 23 when I started experiencing symptoms. I was 26 when I was diagnosed. It was sort of this transitional period in my life where I finished university, had no idea what I wanted to do with my life, and had never been taught the skills, as most people aren't, of how to not just manage stress. Like, I think we hear a lot about, like, stress management skills, and it was how to process the stress, how to deal with the thoughts that were in my head and how they were making me feel in my body, and how to actually sort of migrate that out, and how to learn to better deal with it or understand what it all was and what was real and what wasn't real. And that's where sort of the meditation practices and the yoga came into play. And I think that for many people who deal with any kind of autoimmune or inflammatory conditions, stress is a factor. There's a huge connection, the sort of gut-brain connection, the lymphatic system. We produce more serotonin, which is our happy chemical, in the gut. And few people sort of notice that. So oftentimes we can be have like, you know, an upset stomach, and it really relates to anxiety and to thoughts we're having in our minds. So there is a very close connection to what's happening in our body and what's happening in our mind, and vice versa. Sort of the mind, we often think of it in the brain and part of it, but it's really throughout the body. It's every nervous system connection. So there is a huge component. And in the Western culture, we're really not given the skills to learn how to effectively deal with the stresses and, you know, with the connectivity, with Wi-Fi, with radiation in our environment, with all the things we're exposed to every day. We're under almost, you know, some might say more stress than in the history of the population. Granted, there's been wars and there's been, you know, climate changes and times when we had to, you know, hunt for our food. But we're sort of on this trigger all the time now. We're always in this parasympathetic fight or flight mode where we very rarely give ourselves and our bodies a chance to rest, to really truly heal and recover and digest. And I think that's part of the equation of what's contributing to so many people now dealing with not just digestive upsets, but various kinds of conditions and diseases, and inflammation is at the root of so many of them.
You know, I think you're dead on, you know, when you're talking about that relationship of stress and the inability to shut down and how that is, you know, related to the increase in anxiety in today's society. What was going on in your mind when you were 23 that isn't now? Like, you've been able to shut some of those things down, obviously. Do you remember what was going on in your mind and how you were dealing with it compared to how you're dealing with it now?
Yeah, and I don't even think that I necessarily shut off those things. It's that I learned to understand them, and I learned to, you know, from basic practices that I've taken on, whether it's, you know, mantra-based or Vedic meditation or mindfulness meditation is often what's widely available in sort of Western culture. But understanding that, you know, we don't necessarily have to have an emotional response to every single thought we have in our head, and learning how to observe those thoughts and perhaps tune into the emotional response or physiological response we're having to our thoughts. And the more we can start to sort of pay attention to it, the more we're able to be aware of the response we're having, whether it's an emotional response or a physical response. And it could be as simple as, you know, you hang up the phone from a stressful conversation, you immediately want to go and have, whether it's a bag of chips or a glass of wine or a cigarette or whatever, everyone's got their vice. Mm. But suddenly recognizing, okay, why do I have that feeling, and why am I now reaching for this thing, or why am I going back to that same repeated thought pattern that is not helpful? So for me, it wasn't so much, you know, cutting off ties with the patterns in my life, but better understanding how they were happening and how we could independently, individually start to actually control the response we have to the things that happen in our lives. And it was really about collecting different kinds of tools, and whether the tools are learning how to take really deep breaths, which most of us take very shallow breaths, which keep us in that fight or flight. Going to yoga, it took me, I've now been practicing yoga for 10 years. It took me 10 years of yoga, or 8 years, before I was able to go to a class that wasn't, you know, an aerobics class disguised as yoga, where it wasn't super intense and I was okay just to, you know, relax and rest more in it and allow my body to do what it needed and my mind as well. So it was really taking on some practices that gave me the skills to better manage the stress. And, you know, I often talk to people, and I've written about it in my books too, that we can't control the things that come into our life. We can't control what's going to happen when we walk out of the house in the morning. We can't control the conversations we're going to have with everybody. We can't control what everyone else in our life will do. But what we do have the choice over, it's how we're going to respond in every given situation. And everyone's going to need their own set of tools. And it's something that, you know, amazingly is now being taught more in schools. You know, kids being taught how to sit down and listen. We're always telling kids, be quiet and listen, but we're never teaching them how to do that. Mm-hmm. And when we've always got screens in our faces, no one's been given that opportunity. And so now they're bringing that back in and teaching it, which is so important. And there's, you know, workplaces offering meditation classes and yoga. And it's so, so fundamentally important to our health on a cellular level to have those tools for our peace of mind, our well-being, our productivity, and also for our physical health.
We're talking with Megan Teltner. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to find out about how foods can help heal up your stomach.